Thank you for tuning in. We'll get to your program right after this short word from our sponsor.
At Mosaic Business Consulting, we understand that every business is like a complex mosaic of glass pieces, and we specialize in putting those pieces of a business together to create a seamless and efficient operation of your business. I'm Laura Wagenknecht, and we believe in the unique mosaic of our clients' visions, goals, and dreams. Let us be your partner in crafting a brighter future for your business. We have courses in the Growth Accelerator Masterclass Series and business planning starting soon. Register for a course today. Good morning. I'm your host, Laura Wagenknecht, owner and CEO of Mosaic Business Consulting, and you're listening to The Mosaic Life with Laura W. A mosaic is a bunch of pieces that, when put together, make up the whole in a really beautiful way. And this show plans to discuss the various pieces of a business throughout different industries and how these pieces, when put together, can help develop a better, more efficient, and effective running of your business. To reach me, contact bizradio.us. Today, my guest is Joe Jakubilski. I hope I said that. Did I say it okay?
Yeah, you did great.
Woohoo! So get ready to understand more about what you need to do to protect your computers and your data, etc. He is like the bomb when it comes to this. It's really cool. So Joe's been an entrepreneur and small business owner working with small businesses for most of his career. He started working early in life. At just the tender age of 13, he got his first job working in a restaurant. He also spent most of his summers cutting grass and winters shoveling driveways. So entrepreneurship, here we come. But soon he got the cooking bug, which I'd love to learn more about. And he helped run a really busy kitchen at age 16. And talk about your motivation. This guy is a go-go-goer. At this point, he thought that culinary was definitely his mission. But as most of you entrepreneurs know, life is not a linear path. And computers and marketing and printing and publishing really became his businesses. And he even found himself working in corporate roles a little bit, briefly. Ultimately, cybersecurity seems to have won his heart, and he believes strongly in protecting people's livelihoods and their privacy, and is concerned about the threat it poses to our way of life and our national security. So get ready to listen in on what we can do as entrepreneurs to really grow our businesses effectively and protect our data. Welcome to the show, Joe. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Laura. I'm really honored to be asked and grateful to share a little bit of what my path has been like as an entrepreneur and as it relates to other small businesses today. So ready to chat.
This is great. Well, I have to go back to the culinary because, you know, it doesn't seem like a direct line from culinary to cybersecurity. So can you talk to me about what shifted between the culinary field and then going into computers and printing and all that? That sounds very interesting, that transition. So tell me about your journey, if you will.
Yeah, thanks. I would say my cooking and my love of cooking came out of my family. You know, our loved ones tend to show how they care for one another in different ways. And for my family, food had a lot to do with that. So yeah. Grandmother and Italian grandmother and a Polish grandmother who loved to cook and feed us and care for us. And my mom was also doing similar things. So I spent a lot of time in the kitchen. I learned my way around, and I also, you know, got that kind of servant way or servant heart, if you will. It did me well as a young entrepreneur, as you mentioned. But along the way, as you pointed out, things usually take some twists and turns. And in this case, it happened to be, you know, from making some poor choices as a young adult. And I ended up getting myself hurt in an accident that didn't need to happen.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, you know, thinking that's a tragedy at the time. But of course, oftentimes there's good that grows out of things that are not so good. And I would say this is certainly from in my case, that's what happened. Instead of going to culinary school, I was told I probably should find something to do that I wasn't going to be on my feet all the time. The next logical step what for me became computers and graphic design, really. I had a high school teacher as I finished high school who was an enthusiast with Macintosh as the Macintosh was just coming onto the scene. And he brought his own machine in and allowed me to use it at lunchtime to learn how to use some of the programs. And for a long time after that, that's how I made a living. And it became a big part of my entrepreneurial journey. Just outside of high school, I had my own small graphics agency that I ran for several years, doing lots of different things in the advertising and marketing space for small businesses. And right after that, I did get into a corporate position in marketing, and it was tied to cybersecurity. Interestingly enough, I worked closely with the CEO of a software company, development company that was focused on security. And way back then, these things that this visionary leader was talking about, and my job was to help him communicate it in slides. Back in the day, remember, people would actually make slides and show them on a projector. And that was my job, working closely with the founder and software developer. And he was talking about things, laying out privacy that had to do with electronic mail and the safety of how we were going to know if this was truly the message that was sent and how can we prove it and things of this nature. So I think it sowed the seeds early on for understanding privacy and cybersecurity at the root.
Yeah. And, you know, I think about what you're talking about, and so many of us in this day and age don't, at least this is my perception and I could be wrong, but don't really consider who we're sharing our data with when we're signing up for an app, when we're, you know, trying to purchase something online, when we allow a card to be on file for recurrent payments to a particular company, whoever that might be. But, you know, there are so many ways that we can get into trouble. And I'm just wondering, I know I don't think about it, what are some of those things that we need to start looking at that we haven't been looking at?
Yeah, you bring up a lot of, there's a lot of great points within that, Laura. you're right. We particularly Americans have kind of given our privacy away in many ways, for the use or for the, what we consider free use of software or applications, particularly social media, but also our, search, the monsters, Google and Facebook really have been, it's ubiquitous for us to use, and people are sharing tons of information freely and not even understanding that we have there's lists and lists and lists of checkboxes of privacy settings and other settings within the software that can allow us to tighten it up a little bit. But further than that, I think we're now to the point where we don't really know if we can trust the providers when they say they're going to do something or when they say they're not going to share something, for example, and then they turn around and change their mind or change their policy and boom, they're now sharing it. We just had a great example of that with the Indeed, Glassdoor, which if you're not familiar, Glassdoor is a site where you can rate companies that you have worked for and do so anonymously so that other people would then be able to maybe glean insights as to whether this is going to be a good company for me to go to work for. Well, you know, it's supposed to be kept confidential through some, I think it was an acquisition, a new company took it over, and they decided to un-anonymize those postings. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. So could you imagine, you know, you made this, you've posted this information maybe about the current company that you're working for because you're maybe dissatisfied in certain ways, or you just want to share that insight with somebody. And now your name is being attached to it. So.
Wait, so after the acquisition, they can go backwards in time? It almost feels like that's illegal because there was a precedent or a policy that was in place at the time of posting. Wouldn't that seem like an illegal kind of approach to things?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I would say that it certainly is at the least would be a gray area. But unfortunately, you know, when we look at those licenses that we're approving when we sign up for these services or this particular any kind of software that we're, you know, using on a regular basis, we may not have really known what's in there and really what are the terms. Did we actually read it and know?
Yeah.
if they decide to change their policy, then too bad. Well, wow. That's what, you know, most of the case, those licenses and those permissions that we're giving by using and agreeing, accepting, we're now saying, okay, you're in charge. You get to change. You get to dictate the policy, and whether it stays the same or whether it changes, that's up to the
well. And you're talking about something that's really a biggie. I suspect, you know, whenever you do an update to a program, or they provide a privacy policy update, they email it to you or text you or somehow, right? And you look at the information, most people don't even look at it. Most people just, you know, at least as far as I've seen, will just go, okay, agree. And they haven't read through it. What would you say when we're looking at those agreements that we should be, what are some of the key things we should be looking at?
Well, you know, anytime we are using another tool, regardless of what it is, I would say the first thing is this absolutely necessary? If this is just something that you're looking at for, you know, entertainment purposes, or, you know, maybe it's going to make, could help in a business setting, you know, improve a process or something. How important is that? Because there is, you know, there's usually some sort of trade-off with privacy or access to the data that the company is collecting. I'm not a lawyer. When we look at those agreements, sometimes it's, you know, just like everybody else, it's hard for me to make sense of that. So what you do want to do is make sure that you are locking down any of the settings that are available in a software package. You want to, you know, not be sharing or not allow wide access. And you do want to read the, you know, if there's any remedy or change policies that are in an agreement, just kind of understanding that, you know, you might not have any or the company may not have any limits based on this agreement, just so that you know, okay, there's no limits. They can change it whenever they want. Maybe I'm going to be really extra careful about what I'm sharing within this software.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm only, you know, be very use it in just limited cases or something.
Yeah. Well, and to that end, you know, what are some of those settings you were talking about that are simple things we could take to heart that we could change in our behaviors online or on our apps that are just small things that we should take a look at? Like, what are some of the settings we should make sure are toggled off or, you know, somehow not available?
Yeah, so there's a number of different ways to look at this. And the first thing I'll share is what are considered basic and fundamental cybersecurity principles that everybody would want to practice and start to change their behavior, because it's not very, doesn't take a lot of technical skill. It doesn't take a lot of cost, if any cost at all. And it's really about just that, changing our behavior. So this is really a behavior change program rather than a cybersecurity program. But the benefit is that it can reduce your cybersecurity risk a great deal. And by a great deal, I mean like 90% of or more of the problems that are occurring can be related to some of these practices. So the first
Go ahead, lay it on me, dude.
It's a pretty short list. So I would say you would want to make sure that you're not reusing any passwords and that you're using passwords that are strong and unique. So consider, when I say strong, we want that to be 16 characters or longer. And we want it to include, you know, upper lowercase numbers, symbols, if the program will allow it. And by making that nice and long like that and not reusing it, you're greatly reducing the chances that anybody can just break through your password. Or should your credentials get breached in some other incident, they're not going to be able to use that and try to get into your other account because you've reused it.
Right. And so, you know, somebody told me a while ago in reference to that our password could be a phrase of some kind that's simple to remember, but that maybe has characters in the middle or numbers in the middle to break things up. Is that a good approach or?
That is a good approach. They're typically called passphrases. And it would allow you to then take maybe a random several words and put them together and string them together with different characters or spaces to create a longer password and maybe something that you could easily remember. The problem is that even though you may create a passphrase that you remember, like long walks on a you know, sunset beach, and you put a dash in between each of the words. It creates a long and unique password, but you're not going to be able to remember that one and then another one and another one. Like, do you know how many accounts do you have, Laura?
Hundreds.
Right. So the second tip is that everyone should be using a password manager. And not a password manager that is inside the browser, but a password manager that is a separate encrypted password manager that will help you create those long and unique passwords or passphrases. It will save them and recall them for you. And it also help you keep track of if there are breaches that are happening. Most of those products are able to go out and just be aware and let you know, hey, this has been exposed somewhere and it's out there. You might want to change it.
So I'm hearing you say use something like LastPass versus Google as your password manager.
I would, yes. And I happen to use 1Password, not to particularly, you know.
Right. No, it's great.
Yeah, it's just the one that works for me. So here is one time where there is a little bit of a cost. There are some others out there and you just want to do some research and find what's the best fit for you. There's some free versions as well.
Nice. Yeah. Well, and so step one is have a strong password, right? Yeah. And then
don't reuse them. So step two would be, making sure that you use multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication wherever possible on your accounts, particularly accounts that have any kind of link to your email or a link to your financial information, financial accounts of any kind, accounting packages, things of that nature, even your social media.
Yeah, got it.
So when you're using MFA, the oftentimes we have you can have those codes. It's going to create a code. It's going to send you that code. It's going to ask you for that code. First of all, you never want to share that code with anybody else. Someone who might be trying to reset your password could be trying to trick you and getting you to send them that code. Don't send that code. You also want to, if you can, use a third-party app like the Google Authenticator or the Microsoft Authenticator. Duo is another one. Those are going to link your phone or other device with the authenticator, and it's going to know that it's going to send that code that is linked to that device every 30 seconds.
So
when you're asked for a code, you could just go to the app, the authenticator app, and then you're going to place that code in. It's a safer way.
Okay. I hate to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. What was number three?
Number three would be to recognize phishing attempts. That is, people are trying to trick you into giving up your credentials through some sort of a deception or sending you links or emails that are going to install some malware that might be trying to steal those credentials, or sending you to a website that looks just like your bank website login completely, but they're actually recording your credentials. So identifying phishing is, it's the number one way that folks, big breaches, little breaches, it's the number one way that people get, initiate the crime. It's the number one cyber crime.
Wow.
So it's, and it's easy because criminals only have to deliver an email. So identify phishing.
Well, this has been really fantastic. I sincerely appreciate it. I know it's too short of a time to really cover the breadth of what you do, but I so want to thank you for your time and your expertise. I'm going to have you back, and we can delve a little deeper into some of the things that we can do to really improve our businesses and our data.
I would welcome it, and I'll try to be shorten my sentences next time.
Hard to do, Joe. You've got so much to say. It's fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on. It was great. And I want to thank you for listening to The Mosaic Life with Laura W. You can listen to this episode again and get this great content, or listen to other great hosts and their shows by going to bizradio.us and click on shows. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.